Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops. Today on Open Loops, we have Dr. Kishara Ninki. She is a specialist in ancient history, archaeology, theology, the occult, esoteric sciences, and most importantly, today Kishara is going to talk a lot about herself and a lot about some of the things she's found that point to evidence. And here's what interests me about Kishara: evidence of an extraterrestrial genealogy. You know, this is one of the things I talk to a lot of people on this show, and not everybody has evidence. Some people talk about claims and have abduction stories. Kishara is very keen on making sure that what she says is substantiated. So we're going to talk to her about that. Kishara, thanks so much for coming on.
Hi. Thank you for having me. It is truly a pleasure to be here.
Well, I am glad. I am glad. I'm not even sure where to start with you, honestly. You could go in so many different directions, and we were already talking before this started rolling about a bunch of interesting things. You know what I think might be good, though? I mean, I think your origin story, which, by the way, it involves some hybrid stuff. If you've read the description of the show or seen the title, that, you know, there's some connection to our Sumerian god ancestors going on, which I want to get to. But even your story of where you were born is radically interesting. You're supposedly not supposed to be alive today. Let's start there.
I was born on Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. And in 1974.
Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
They recently, last year, I believe it was, announced that from 1956 to 1985, they were dumping radioactive waste, weapons grade radioactive waste, into the water supply. This water supply went to everybody on Camp Lejeune. So by the time I was conceived, that base was soaked, and they added in chemicals from dry cleaning plants, from just about everything. This is kind of making a water slurry, if you will. So my father was stationed there as a Marine in 1973. I was conceived on Camp Lejeune, which now they have found 7 different types of cancers, for people who actually did make it to adulthood, in addition to neurological issues, fertility issues, the nervous system, just down the line. And there's currently, at this point, 25 known conditions. Yeah, they've had to list these. These are all listed on the sites that the VA has put up for Camp Lejeune. I don't have any of the major things, like any of the cancers. I don't
Wow.
have any of those things that would have absolutely killed me. What I do have are altered cells. You don't get away from radiation without altering your body at a genetic or at a cellular level. So I don't absorb nutrition in several different ways, including at a cellular level. I don't make ARN. And I know I don't say that word properly. I'm sorry. IRON, ARN. I'm sorry, I
Is
have
that
to
part that's
slow
not part of the genetic alteration, is it, that you can't pronounce iron?
No, I have a bit of an accent. It's very muddy.
Okay, no, totally fine. So that's intriguing. When did you was this something you knew your entire life about your altered body, or in the alterations, or is that something you discovered later? I mean, I can't imagine that you grew up with things being easy if you weren't able to absorb nutrients properly.
Yeah, I did not know about that. All I knew is that food hurt. If I eat meat, it feels like I'm swallowing bricks. So that became some, especially red meat. And I'm not a vegetarian. I love lamb. It just doesn't love me.
Oh
So
no.
yeah, and bread ends up feeling like rocks. It's just it's food and it's sugar. Sugar's another one that if I eat too much, it makes me nauseous, extremely, extremely nauseous. So
Right.
my body, I gave in to that very early. And I went, okay, look, if you be nice, I will eat food you like. That was the deal. I didn't care why. I was like, just stop, because you're that really, I don't like this. So I got
Totally.
very much into the Asian food and just went with what was nice. And when I found out about this, it just filled in all the gaps. It was like, oh, that's why I have a yellow eye. That's why I have an eye that's blue and green. That's why I'm redheaded. That's why I'm Rh negative. That's why I can't absorb nutrition. This is why I can't eat earth food very well unless it's the superfoods and it has to be in liquid format. My stomach acid is also not like human stomach acid. One of the important reasons humans can eat meat is because they have very high stomach acid. I can't even break down tablets. So I got like a baby system, man, and I spoil it.
How, I mean, what is, to me, it sounds like eating this stuff is, I mean, it is important. Everybody says you're supposed to have proteins and nutrients and whatnot. I mean, aside from the fact that I guess what I'm wondering is, it's miraculous that you're alive and didn't get the cancers, but also it's miraculous you're staying alive now with your conditions. I mean, why are you, do doctors look at you as some sort of medical anomaly even today? What is going on with you, Kishara?
They usually misdiagnose me with things. I've been misdiagnosed with fibromyalgia. Okay, that was one of the big ones. Yeah, it's for a long time I was in a lot of pain. And a lot of that came down to I had to stop eating Western food, start eating just Asian food, and feed my body like it's a ferret. A high amount of protein that I get from collagen powder. And I started taking basically a triple dose of prenatal vitamins. And once I got to doing that, everything changed. It was like, man, it was like I was reborn. I mean, I went from being in a wheelchair to figuring this out, and going, okay, so my biology is different from a cellular level.
Right.
And once I started treating it more, and this is going to sound really not to be dramatic, but once I started treating myself like I was an alien, I got better.
Well, let me ask the next obvious question, which is, what are you an alien?
I am.
Okay, now look, this is where everybody in the audience goes, what Greg, who are
Exactly.
you talking to? Who is this woman? What is she, or is she a woman even? I mean, how do we okay, so
I'm a woman. It's, I would break that down. I may not be from Earth, but I have grown up on Earth and I am still a woman.
how long have you okay, when did you know that you weren't a human woman?
You know, growing up, oh God, this is gonna, I grew up pagan. So a lot of my beliefs and foundations when I was very little had that pagan flavor. I knew I was an elf. That's how they explained it to me. I knew I was an elf, and I was always told, can't tell the humans, can't stay to around the humans too long. They will hurt you.
Who told you this?
This would be neighbors, family members. Yeah. You
Did
know,
you
it
had
was.
humans telling you you weren't human growing up?
No, they told me I was an elf. And it there was weird things when I was growing, when I was a kid, right? I
That's
would get people
strange.
come up to me and accuse me of being a demon. I'm serious. I had people come up and ask me if I ate babies at one point. I'm
But
like,
is
what
it
is wrong
okay?
with
So I just want to differentiate though between people being mean to you because you know maybe you look different
that's
versus
something they're picking up on.
okay. So you think I just want to get this correct. How are you so certain it wasn't just kids being mean for the sake of being mean? Why was it that you're a mythological creature or a non-human creature and they actually sense that versus just calling you names, you think?
It's in the family tree. It's in the genetics. We are descendants of Alfheim. We are elves. Our people were called Vanir, not elves. Elves is a mistranslation into Saxon English. But
Whoa.
yes, I am Ragnar Lodbrok, King Ragnar Sigurdsson in history. He was half. His mother was a princess of Alfheim, who married King Sigrid of Denmark. So she is my 13th grandmother, 13th generation grandmother. So yes, when you hit that point, you actually get into the genealogy of Alfheim, the royal genealogy. And it was called that because King Alf, the Vanir, built it.
This is a real I mean, should I even say person? Were the
Yes.
elves okay. Does the mythological elf, I assume the mythological elf is different than this king, or did they come with abilities that are elfish? How would you explain it?
The elves here on Earth were part of a colony. And I will say, for description wise, Tolkien actually wrote his elves based on Prose Edda, which is an old Norwegian document written in the 12th century. And it has physical descriptions of elves in there. In Scandinavian, they're not myths. In Scandinavian, they were history. And most people today who are Norse, Swedish, Danish, they understand this history with faith. So we actually have a lot of historical documentation. I think what it comes down to is we're talking about a forgotten society that was from a colony that they did set up, they moved away from the colony, set up in Greenland. Greenland was impacted by a comet, which we found evidence for. And they had refugee from there. So we actually do have history And the mythological aspect doesn't quite fit, but the elves descended from Sirians, as you guys call them. The planet is Vega. It's the only planet in Canis Major with two moons. You can look it up on charts.
It's gone now, I'm assuming.
No, it's still there. You can look it up.
Tell me this. How in the world, and this is the piece that still puzzles me. You talked to me a little bit about this, but I really want to clarify for the audience. Your father, what is his role in this genetic lineage? What isn't his role, and where does your alien bloodline come from, you think? I know you've told me a little bit, but yeah, other people don't know. I know there's certain mysteries around who your mother might be and
Yeah.
whatnot. But yeah, how do you where are you from, Kishara? Whom are you from?
That is a question I'm still trying to answer as far as I found out when I was 6 months old, I was kidnapped off Camp Lejeune. So my mother who raised me is not my biological mother. Found that out in a DNA test. So I don't have an answer for that side. All I was told is that she was Syrian royalty.
Holy moly, how did your dad meet Syrian royalty?
He didn't. I was a hatchling, is a slang term they use. There was a project, yeah, this has to connect to another project, sorry. There
Give
was
it to
a
me.
project called Monarch. And the whole deal with Monarch was the genetic, learning how to make genetic recipes. That seems to be what I am.
You
Now,
created as a combination of you believe you do have lineage to your father, though. You've
yes.
substantiated there's a genetic test. Okay. So he's part of it, but it's a com you're a combination of him and
More
something
Syrian.
else. Oh, wow.
My father was Syrian in Anuna. And I'm presuming he had human DNA. I never got to meet him. And he died in 2005.
Wait, you never met your biological father?
No.
What the? So you've never met any of your parents?
No.
My gosh, I can't even imagine. Well, that's a whole nother topic in itself. Oh my gosh, who raised you?
According to my uncles, my mother, who the only mother I know, the woman who raised me,
The
is the
adopted.
same woman who kidnapped me from Camp Lejeune, who apparently
Ooh.
worked for General Dynamics. I know. I never thought anything about it when I was younger. I was like, yeah, my mom works at General Dynamics.
What's the
Then
connection
I
there?
found out General Dynamics does work for projects for government, for SSP, they make smaller electronic items.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is that some like Lockheed Martin
Yes, Lockheed
Skunk
Martin.
Works kind of thing? Okay, interesting. That's a whoa. So this story is that you are like born into a black ops situation by the fact that you're kidnapped when you're 6 months old. You were created in a lab. That probably explains why you were kidnapped by this woman.
Well, it's really old genealogy and genetics and alien DNA. There's no way the government was going to let me go. That's not going to happen. That's why I went into Stargate when I was nine.
Now, yes, this is something you told me. You mentioned that I mean Project Stargate has different can I've heard it talked about as the remote viewing program in the 70s. Also there's connections to the Montauk Project. What is
Now,
your how would you define Stargate and for people that aren't familiar?
one thing I will say first is Stargate had sub projects, and I do have documentation proving this. Stargate Alpha is the one the civilians were told about because it's nice and gentle and pretty. It's just a remote viewing thing. All we did was look at stuff. Well, I wasn't part of that.
Oh,
I was part
gosh.
of Stargate Bravo.
Project Bravo. That's the name.
Stargate Bravo, yes.
Got it.
And
Got it.
for this aspect, most of my training was in Cambridgeshire, England. It's a small little school there. That project was also documented very specifically with the University of Cambridge as a psychoeugenics program. They take organics as nickname or slang term. Organics are people who have a bloodline that has dominant psychic abilities. For us, it's clairvoyance. And once you pass the testing, they take the organics, and what the end goal was is to take someone with a passive ability like clairvoyance or empathy or telepathy and combine that with an active kinetic ability. Now, there's various types of telekinesis. I have a dormant electrokinesis, and they were trying to trigger that out, which did not work. Otherwise, I'd be shocking myself. So,
Is there
what
any
they
traces
did.
of that still? Do you ever look at a light bulb and try to get it going? I mean, just curious.
No, I actually I'm working on the control thing because I really need to. If I'm going to play with this, it needs to have control. Because last time I tried to play with it, I set a section of the carpet on fire. I don't
Oh.
know how to get it.
So wait, you're telling me a flame came out of nowhere? Fire came out of nowhere? Like,
It fried the top of the carpet down. It didn't get down to the wood, but it went from the top, and it was a circle, and it just it but it didn't make a flame. It just started smoking. And I realized that I should not be messing with this until I know more about what I'm doing.
yeah.
And women are not usually, all PC stuff aside, I don't care. Women neurologically are not designed to handle kinetic abilities as easily as men are. Men handle active kinetic abilities very well. Women handle the passive, and even in esoteric studies, they will refer to the passive abilities as more feminine and the active abilities as more masculine. And the way the brains are set up, I'm sorry, men and women are neurologically different. That's just reality. So the way men's brains are set up, they are very good at those active abilities. This is why they're very good assassins. And women are very good at that. Let me go and see things and see into the future and scry. We're really good at divination.
I love that you're taking an anti-woke stance in the psychic realm.
I take all.
I mean, you probably take it in more, but I was gonna say I'm not sure. It's probably the first time I've heard someone be like, "Look, men psychics are different than women psychics. Let's fess up.
Yes.
Joe Biden is trying to make them equal." No one's even talking about psychics. But that is. You're ahead of the curve in a way. You know that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, maybe 50, when everybody's talking about psychic abilities, there's definitely going to be a gender equality kind of conversation around it. So I appreciate it. This, you're trying to keep things ahead of your time. That's pretty good. But that's so interesting. So, okay, let me go back to England for a second. So you, these memories, you told me that memories came back to you of Project Stargate. I mean, is there any other kind of, I imagine there's probably not too much documentation on who was in that program. Certainly, we don't know everybody was that wasn't Montauk or MK Ultra, or certainly not the SSP program, but is there any other kind of evidence. I guess I'll ask you this because you are so keen on evidence. How do you know these are memories of the project and not just, dreams or things you made up in your head? Is there anything that supports you spending time in England beyond this kind of memories coming to the surface?
What helped was the CIA declassified over 12,000 documents. So Stargate was extremely well documented, right down to their budget. Okay. And Cambridge is all documented. That was a joint project with MI5, CIA, and a Japanese doctor. And so I remembered this stuff. And then I found the documentation. Because, I mean, before that, I wasn't going to tell anybody. I mean, there was no point in telling anybody because I couldn't prove anything. It's just another dumb story. But once I found the documents, I'm like, okay. So I keep one on my phone, literally. That is, it was written by Stargate G, writing about the other programs. And it was some sort of annual report, and it talks about all the different branches and Cambridge and everything. And that it was like finding a confirmation safety blanket, I guess, to have remembered all of it and then find the validation and the verification that says, yes, that's a memory.
Now, this is
And
interesting too. How does this, what's the explanation for what you do remember of your childhood? Did you have an altar? Do you remember the years of your childhood before this? Like, how does that work with your waking consciousness, I suppose.
I have grown up with partial amnesia. I don't remember the 80s. My
My gosh.
childhood in general has bits and pieces that I remember. It's
I was
been
gonna
a
say, you
process trying to
messed up on
remember.
the Jerry curl. What?
I've learned some of the 80s history. And I literally had to stop for a minute. I'm going, I don't remember a person named Jerry Curl.
Yeah, she was the most popular girl at yes, no, in high school. No, I don't know. I mean, so that's interesting. That's amnesia. Okay, so this is like I mean, Kishara, look, I again, everybody's gonna hear this, people are gonna say different things, but you really do sound sincere and you sound, I mean, and I know you've done lie detector tests, right?
I have. And I keep that report available unedited for people to see.
Yeah. I mean, you're very much about, hey, this is a real experience for me, and this is real stuff I'm talking about here. And I know you're critical of other people who talk similarly of these stories, but really don't have anything to back it up.
I will not bring up anything about me that I can't verify. And if there's something where, if I don't have verification, even I'm going, look, man, that's just a story. If I'm just coming out with a story, you better have something to back that up. I don't like
Yeah.
it. It's like telling you about a dream. So what? So I'm just, I prefer, we have a saying in the family, your word is your honor. I want to show that I'm not going to lie about this. And if I don't have absolutely no doubt in my mind, I'm not going to tell you about it.
Yeah.
It's just
Super interesting.
people are asking for disclosure. People want something verifiable.
Yes.
I'm offering verification. I'm offering disclosure. I'm offering a bloodline and saying, look, we are legit. We've been here for a while. It's yes, we live in hiding. Yes, people are scary. And I'm still trying to get over that. People are scary. Yeah, I get social anxiety because I wasn't really exposed to people a lot. So again, going back to disclosure, they want real things. So not just my story, not just my genealogy, not just documents from the CIA. Bringing in artifacts. Okay, artifacts that can verify even what other people have said, which is something I hope to help. It's our in our genealogy going back to Canis Major, which is referred to as Sirius. Before that, our people, according to the history, came from Lyra, from a feline species in Lyra. The planet exploded, there was a war, and I found the piece of artifact that verifies this, that the Anuna were part of that war. I found a stela where the Anuna were bragging about how they won the war. It has the constellation of Lyra on it. Below that, there's this feline animal. And two other species are stabbing this cat in the stela. This is all to represent that they were fighting with Lyra and they won. So for us who've talked about Lyra in history, this is the only piece of artifact I've found that talks about this war. However, there is a 50,000-year-old Lion Man statue that we've uncovered many years ago. There's statues from Egypt of cat-headed people, and there are these artifacts coming out of Mexico, also with cat-headed people. So there's a quite a bit of history here on Earth of these feline people who came here.
That is interesting. I always wondered why they chose or they choose to put them the heads on those in the art if we're just supposed to believe it's an interpretation of something. I mean, it seems a little too coordinated across different cultures, some of these things that I don't know if there are cat people. I've never seen it myself. It wasn't talked about in my history growing up, but is that's the Lyra thing that they're feline?
Apparently, I'm not sure what happened in this war entirely, or what started it, I mean, is, but I'm betting it's 50-50, on both sides. Usually wars are half both sides, everybody's got things to blame. So whatever what was going on with this planet resulted in its destruction. And there were people who refugeed out. And the reason they went from Lyra to Vega in Canis Major was because of the star. The star in Lyra was a white star, and it was almost identical to the star in Sirius. The biggest one. There's three of them. To the biggest one. And that's why they went there. Now, as far as coming here, it's very interesting because this star that has only been there 12,000 years is turning white. Oh, don't you remember the sun when you were a kid? What color was it?
It was orange,
And what
right?
color is it now?
I mean, I haven't really thought about it. It's different.
It's
It
different.
interesting. Is that why everybody's Googling my eyes hurt after last week?
Well, you shouldn't look at an eclipse, but if you do that, your eyes gonna hurt, man.
Well, could be. Is it because they're getting whiter? I don't know. I mean, I have pretty pale skin, and people looked away from me in high school all the time. Well, that's not the reason why. But no. What I was gonna say is, this is, I think, the thing that I've been sitting on the edge of my seat with this entire time, Kishar, and even since we first spoke, is this big old question, and I'm ready for you to blow my mind with this. I'm ready for you to go, yeah, no, that's actually a simple explanation. So tell me if you got it. Here's the question. How in the heck can anybody prove that you have lineage to a group of beings that are from off planet? I mean, how do you do DNA testing to prove you're from Lyra or that you're part Anunnaki? I mean, that is, who's got that information? Who has those genes even to compare it against? That is something I really want to understand.
This gets back into projects because projects does have a database. They have over 300 biological samples of various species documented. They do know the difference. Now, even in I can't remember the gentleman's name, another whistleblower from actually England who hacked into the United States system many years ago. One of the documents he pulled up was a species list. And we are listed number 17 on the list as Sirian or slash elf.
Who the heck was it? Was it McKinnon or Nick Pope, or I don't even know who it could
I
be.
don't think it was Nick Pope. There's been a lot of legal stuff still going on with him.
Okay.
So.
This guy hacked in and saw that we have documentation about alien species,
He did.
different species.
He found a military list. I'm sorry, I cannot remember the gentleman's name. I'm sure there's people yelling at this saying the name. But
Yeah.
yeah, English man who was a hacker who got into the Pentagon, and he found a military list with non-human officers.
Whoa.
So it's a
Okay.
while ago. But
Okay.
this is also part of why the government does have a DNA database. They can test your DNA and verify, yes, you're this species or that species, because this is not like just the Anunnaki and the Sirians here on Earth. In the Tula artifacts, which we haven't addressed yet, in the Tula artifacts, there are over 30 skulls that have been found with
Right.
artifacts documenting all of these species. And this includes the Nazca mummies for all those people still saying they're fake. That's ridiculous.
Yes.
The
And by the way, I want
Nazca
to say it is actually, I knew I got, I'm proud of myself for getting this right, UFO people out there. It is. It's Gary McKinnon is the name of the guy.
That's his name. Yes. So,
Sorry,
yes,
you're
he.
saying so artifacts, English hacker. Mummies. Oh,
Yeah.
sorry. I know we're all over the place. The mummies, people are claiming the mummies are fake.
But these artifacts have depictions of this species. They have depictions of the Paracas skulls, along with several other elongated skull species, as well as insectoid species, as well as felines, canines, the bird-headed people, the eagle, very eagle-looking head, found in Ecuador as well. So, and there are thousands of these. Oh, and this guy with tentacles hanging off his face. So, I don't know what to call this guy. But all of these are
Yeah.
bone samples, depictions. So it shows that basically South America was part of a, I'm going to say, colony that had multiple alien species living there. And
What?
this is what need this is when I hear all these things that are coming backlashed on it about how Jaime Maussan brought cake aliens to the Parliament of Mexico. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
You
you
know,
think
even
those are you think that's BS, those corpses.
yeah, and they're still trying to make people think it's fake. And I keep looking at it going, why are they fighting back so hard? Because they
Wait a
don't want
minute.
it to come
Are the
out.
corpses real or are they fake?
Yes, they are absolutely legit. There are over 20 bodies. Dude, Gaia did a full investigation when in 2017, when Jaime Maussan did the press release in Mexico, he presented X-rays, DNA results. There were scientists from multiple countries there standing up going, yes, this is legit. I
Wow.
mean, it all came out and yet flipped into cake aliens despite X-rays, scans, DNA testing, doctors from multiple countries saying, yes, this is legit. Still, you know, there's so much evidence out there. It's absolutely insane that people aren't seeing it grouped together in one spot. Because if you took all of this to a court of law, it is empirical. And we are
Now,
at that point.
that is so interesting that I mean, I'm not surprised that the mainstream media is just
Doing what
trying
they're
to
doing.
immediately dismissing this is a scam. And That's what always happens. Things get memed, things get spat on, things are, I mean, there's no, you know, no one's taken this issue as seriously as they could be. But I also find it strange that, I mean, why are, is it always these little green guys? Like these little green guys and grays are, this is, you, these are real. In your opinion, it does look like this.
Yes, there are various depictions of individuals with the gray skin. Even with those Nazca mummies, they had gray skin. So it's, yeah, the gray thing is like the big black eyes artifacts from Mexico have those. I want to say, I think I've seen about six different types with the typical gray look with the black eyes. And these individuals, some of these artifacts show a hybridization between the two different alien grays on this artifact, where the female gray is giving birth to a hybrid baby of these two different non-human species. And it's on quartz crystal on top of that, dating 17,700 BCE pre-Ice Age. It is unbelievable. I mean, this stuff looks like it's laser etched in.
So, oh my gosh. This is all very, very compelling. I do wonder, okay, so let's also fill in some gaps. So we have Gary McKinnon's hacking the different species. How do you what kind of lineage are you doing? How are you looking up your lineage and connecting it to that documentation?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. My entire genealogy is public. And you can go on ancestry.com, and there are over 25,000 supporting documents. And this has gone all the way down the line. I've added my DNA test to it to make sure that the tree is verified, that it is correct. I've also applied to Guinness World Records. I'm that confident in the genealogy, in the research, and this goes back to Enki,
Yeah,
who is
how
also.
do you can you I mean, this is now Enki is this is like Adam and Eve stuff. I mean, the
Yeah.
beginning of all time. Who has the codes? Who has ancestry.com? How do they have Enki's info? I mean, this is the thing I'm just trying to wrap my head around.
This is where I cross-referenced and did the research. Okay, I took my genealogy back as far as I could go, and it went through quite a bit. And it hit this point where it went biblical, which, growing up pagan, that was very weird. Very weird. So it went biblical, and I started going, okay, look, I must have messed up somewhere because this should not be connecting. But it kept connecting. And because it used to be in the past that names were connected with genealogy. So let me give you the Norse example. This made it very easy to trace. Plus, the royal aspect were documented down the line.
So you actually did substantiate that piece. There is royal
Yes.
lineage. You can go into the if someone said, "Hey, let me look up Kishar and actually see this," they would say, "Oh, okay, she's connected to that elf king."
Yes, it is documented on there. Like I said, it's royal on both sides. Down the line, we go back as far as Troy, where we were priestesses at the Temple of Apollo. And the Oracle of Delphi, whose name was Sephi, is also in the tree. You keep going back further, like I said, you hit biblical. And we are related to King Zihasudra of Shrupak, who is the last king on the Sumerian kings list. They found Shrupak in 1938, along with Eridu. So these exist. Zihasudra is documented as a historical figure. And as he's in multiple texts, including the Book of Enoch, who
Oh,
is
yeah.
right, and the Chaldean Genesis, which predates biblical text. 7000 BC. So all of this like verified, okay, Zihusudra existed. He was part of the Sumerian kings list. He was apparently hybrid, or as some say, Nephilim. And it was Enki who came forward and said, no, he's actually my son, which Zihusudra did not know. So he found out kind of after the flood. And he shows up in the Epic of Gilgamesh, long after the flood, where he's sad, basically. And Gilgamesh goes to find him because he is the last person in the family to have ascended. And while other people think ascension means spirit comes out of the body, that's not it. In this case, ascension was a ritual. And there was a formula that they had made that eliminated telomeres in the DNA, turning the person into an immortal. So when Gilgamesh talked to Zihusudra, it was thousands of years later. And he told Gilgamesh about the flood that was thousands of years before that, so long ago that Gilgamesh didn't know anything about it. Right? So Gilgamesh was like, what flood? What are you talking? Now, Gilgamesh is 24 or 27,000. Sorry, 2700, not 27,000, 2700 BC. And he didn't know anything about everything that Zihusudra, who is also known as Noah, taught him. So all of these pieces of literature through several locations, several traditions. You start looking at it once you connect to Zihusudra, all of it's documented out. And that made it very easy to go, okay, so Zihusudra was the son of Enki, and all of Enki's stuff, all of the, which the people are actually the Anunna, not the Anunnaki. Anunnaki are the Anunna born on Earth. It's not their original name.
There's no way
So
this can be your original name. I mean, Kishara
is
Ninki?
Sumerian.
Yeah, you got your Sumerian name coming out. Interesting.
It's they have a tradition when you get to that point of entering adulthood on their terms. Entering adulthood means you change your name. You have a child's name, and Zihusudra is actually a perfect example of this. Noah was his child's name. When he became an adult, he became Zihusudra. So my name changed to Kishara when I became an adult.
So this is interesting because this also is connected to this idea that, and this might get controversial for everybody out there, but let's go there. That the story of Noah, as well as even so far as the resurrection story of Jesus, actually is different characters that go back to Samaria. And, we actually see versions of this story all over the world that are in ancient texts that seem to have been adapted by, some kind of Judeo-Christian interpretation years later. So the Noah, now here's my question for you. We were talking a little bit before about how the military, or in general, there was a group of people that supposedly, located Noah's Ark. Is, which Noah is it? Is it this Anki Noah? Does that all line up? Because I feel like when they discover Noah's Ark or they talk about finding these biblical things, they're talking about the Judeo-Christian one, but not the original story. What is your take on that?
As I caught it on the original story, it wasn't one ark. It was 120 that he built. And he
Oh.
filled those up. Now, I don't know what happened to the rest. They found one of the arks. Originally, it was on a mountain in Turkey. And then it slid down. And right now, it's still there. And they're fighting about it as far as between Turkey and Armenia, I believe is the country. So they found one of the arks. And when you read there's much older versions, because the Bible is only 2,000 years old. And even not even entirely 2,000, Christianity is more 2,000-ish years old. But the Bible was put together by a Council of Nicaea in 400, I believe it was. So as far as all the history before that, that book is just not that old. And it is very edited because there are 127 apocryphal texts. The Ethiopian Bible is entirely different than the King James Bible. They talk about all of this. And the best original story I have found is in the Chaldean account of Genesis, where it gets into the rest of the detail the Bible didn't cover about how Ziasudra was king. And it actually starts before that, when they talk about his birth and how when he was born, he had this kind of reptilian thing on his skin. They really didn't have a term for it. So he had this patch of skin that was very odd. He had this snow white hair at birth. His father got scared when he opened his eyes because he lit up the whole room when he opened his eyes. His father turned to his mother and said, "Is this one of theirs?" It didn't even hesitate. It was like, "This cannot be my son." And she kind of shrugged her shoulders. So she was pregnant about a week. And apparently, again, this is a very unusual thing that in this time period apparently happened fairly commonly. These children would be born, they would look slightly different. Within hours, they were talking. Within days, they were walking and working on the farm. And Noah was one of those. And it's documented in the Bible how his father, it might be the apocryphal text, how his father went to his father, who was Lamech, and was like, "Look, I don't know what to do. This is clearly one of those Nephilim." They in turn went to Enoch, who was Lamech's father. And Enoch was like, "Look, raise him like he's your son." He didn't really have a rest of it for. He was just like, "Raise him like he's your son. Accept him as a gift." And that seems to be what happened. Now, the individual who was Zihasudra's father, his name was Ubaratutu. Actual name, not just some biblical name on a page, but actual person. So once I started connecting the actual people to these biblical names, that again made it easier because they were royal. So they wrote everything down about, oh yes, he had this son became king. And that was what made it very easy. Plus, we get a bit of a timeline.
Yeah. This is very, first of all, I wish you were my Hebrew school teacher. This would have been a lot more interesting. Second, yeah, I mean, I think that there is a lot of clarification and confusion around the Anunnaki, the Anunnaki, because I think Zachariah Sitchin makes things confusing for people. I think it's kind of just thrown into mainstream ufology and in general, if you go to one of these conferences, everybody's going to be talking about, oh, you know about the Anunnaki. I mean, what would you say? Is there what are the myths? What are the realities? What are most people missing about the truth of who these gods or beings were?
I will say I do not support that they were gods. They were
Ah.
people who had psychic abilities and fantastic technology.
They were
They knew
ETs, though,
more.
in your opinion.
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely. I mean, they say it themselves. And I don't go by us. I've actually never read Sitchin's work. I keep meaning to. I know.
Oh, I'm glad. In a way, I'm glad you haven't, though.
I read the cuneiform tablets. And for people who would like to read them themselves, direct translations, you can go to the University of Oxford, okay, or Oxford University, sorry. UCLA is starting to put together one. Stanford has one. These are collections of cuneiform tablets, which we are still translating. There's over 2 million tablets, and we're still translating. Now, Sitchin, just to clarify, Sitchin did not translate this stuff. He compiled it already translated. So he did not do that. He just put the story together. Now, when you compare it to the Enuma Elish and the various other tablets, you start to find out, yes, from what I've heard of Sitchin's writings, it sounds like he got it right. From what I read on these cuneiform tablets, even with missing lines, there's a lot of it. You start going, okay, look, they were people. They fought with each other. They stole from each other. They loved each other. They messed up. They paid the price for messing up. They were people. You know, it's just different type of people. They talk about their entire history of Nibiru in the kings and queens and everything that went down. What brought them to Earth looking for gold, and how they used that gold to fix their atmosphere to save their own people. So it's, they wrote it very clearly. You know, we're not from Earth, but you guys are kind of fun, and we're gonna hang for a bit. You know, so you know, when I look at that, it's like, okay, aliens. The reptilian origin, they came here, they look very humanoid. There are very few differences, but it's very apparent, even in the science, it's very apparent they brought their technology here and taught the people here. This kind of gets into that slave narrative. Okay, I disagree with that slave narrative.
Yeah,
Well,
the
I
search for the gold, is there a reason? Do you think we're all obsessed with gold because that's what they wanted us to mine for? I mean, what is all that?
It's, yeah, the mining wise, that had to happen. The gold wasn't about the value of the gold. You reduce it down to monoatomic gold that is a white powder form. When you put that in the atmosphere of a planet, it acts like a band-aid, allows the atmosphere to heal itself. Gee, why does that sound like chemtrails? I don't know. So they did that. They fixed their planet's
Nice
atmosphere.
slip in there, Kishara. I see what you're doing there. Okay, yeah, keep going, keep going.
Now, I don't know honestly about the chemtrails, but dude, I look at it and I'm like, why does that look familiar?
Interesting, interesting. Okay, I didn't make that connection until now. Okay, so yeah, you reduce it to a white powder. And I mean, look, I know that I've had people point out that. Well, actually, Stephen Michaud, who I've had on the show, who I love, who's very much into telling these stories, though he's kind of a Sitchin, he's all in on Sitchin for some reason. But I think he met him once. He in his book, he talks about how we're still drawn to gold as humans because of this past.
I agree.
So you believe that?
Yes, I think, in my opinion, gold has no intrinsic value except for its use scientifically. Yeah, outside of that, it's just a metal. And I think the reason here on Earth to this day, it is one of those social contaminations. For thousands of years, they were taught how important gold is. And it became, there's a lot of social contaminations. But with the gold thing, even to this day, there are people who will take gold, put it as offerings, dump it in a lake. Why? Because the gods are down there somewhere. That's, you know, the social contamination. But it's valuable for science. It's valuable for space. It's pretty if you want to wear it, sure, go ahead. But other than that, it's not that rare. Earth just had a very large deposit and wasn't that far away. You know, you can find others, but they needed it now. So they ordered from Domino's. They went and got the earth or
Right.
the gold from Earth and fixed their stuff. They had been here for 10 or 20,000 years already. So they had already settled in, built things, had cities, had children, hooked up, done everything. And this became the home of the Anunnaki, the people born here. Enki, Enlil, Marduk, those guys would be Anuna. They're not from Earth. But Thoth is. He is Anunnaki. He is Anuna born of Earth.
Wow. Interesting. Interesting. Did they talk about having, I mean, I guess you did mention that they had these extra sensory abilities. And that's discussed back then. I was kind of curious about your I know we've had conversations before about activating your pineal gland, and how you yourself have enhanced psychic abilities similar to that of Enki. Talk a little bit about that. I'm curious. I mean, what is your day-to-day like? And when did you know that you had these abilities as a kid? We talked a little bit about your telekinesis slash pyrotechnics, but with the carpet. But yeah, like what is your experience having an active third eye?
It is something I've always had. Oddly enough, I assumed everybody had it. When I was little, it never, of course, everybody can do this. And being pagan, it was encouraged to explore psychic abilities. You know,
Yes.
it's so whoever, whatever I was doing, they were like, oh, go see what you can do. So I'm like, okay. So I remember like my first friends. Yeah, I was a weird kid. My first friends were ghosts. I talked to them. I'm sure everybody thought I had invisible friends, but I'm like, no, it's dead dude. He's cool. One of the guys when I was little was a Mexican grandfather who had died. I never caught his name. He was in his late 80s, and he was very protective over his granddaughter. Now, when he died, he kind of just took on to babysitting me. So he was somebody I hung out and I talked with. That sounds so.
That sounds kind of sweet in a way. You had like an old a ghost of a grandfather taking care of you, going on
Was
fishing trips with you in the astral realm. I mean, that's nice.
It's and this is why I never got freaked out by paranormal stuff.
I was gonna
I
say, have
remember
you
being
ever been
taught.
haunted? Maybe not if
Oh,
you're
yeah.
friends with. Okay.
Yeah, they come and they stay, and I'm just like, look, man, you're welcome to stay. Just don't make any loud banging when I'm asleep. I'm okay if they want to make noises otherwise. If they want to try and get off Earth, I can help them with that too. I'm not guaranteeing anything, but it's to me, they're just other people.
Oh
And
my gosh.
one of the biological connections with this, with the pineal gland, with the psychic abilities, is that I'm tetrachromatic. I see a little bit into the UV spectrum. Yellow.
What does that mean? Tell me all about that.
It means it's much easier to see a ghost.
The UV
They,
spectrum.
yeah,
Whoa.
the blues and purples, I see more into that spectrum. If you put it in red, I don't see it very well. I mean, really, it gets worse. But blues and purples, I see just a bit further into that light spectrum, which makes it easier to see non-corporeal things or energy fields or auras. Or
Yeah.
so people are often colors to me. I
What are you getting for me right now? What color?
get a lot of yellow and orange.
Really? Now I know I'm wearing an orange shirt.
Actually, that looks red.
Whoa, okay, maybe in this light it does. But what is that? Is there a meaning behind the colors? Is it just, oh, that's just the aura you see?
Oh no, my I have an extra weird version of psychic abilities on top of this. My neurology, I have a condition called synesthesia.
Oh, that
So
is
all of
so cool.
it's weird.
I know about that. Yeah. Tell, how would you, what, let's hear it. You're so good at describing these things. What is synesthesia?
It is where the senses in your neurology, basically your wiring in your brain, has cross-wired. And many people actually do have versions of this to lesser degrees. Like when you smell something like cake and then you taste it, that's synesthesia.
Yes.
Your crust.
As a
So for me, actually,
hypnotist, we play with this. This is something that is encouraged, especially with people that have past traumatic experiences or just negative emotional states. We take them to the place where they are seeing where they're at, feeling where they what they felt, and hearing what they heard. And if you can get them into that state, they're having a synesthetic experience. It's multiple, and if you can get them there, you can go from there and alter it somehow. So yeah, him that it's it, and when people have it, when people actually just have it and live it, it's rare. But I totally, yeah, people don't often think about it in the way of what you the way you described it. However, it is common practice for people that explore these different mind technologies to generate change in themselves.
dude, I gotta say, it's one of the reasons I get really into the descriptions, because I have to be mindful about how I describe things. Because, for example, when I meet people in person, I see colors and I taste them. Yeah, that gets weird. So I've learned that when people taste sweet and like fruit, these are people I can be friends with. And when people taste odd, like I met somebody once who tasted like vanilla ice cream covered in nicotine. That was the weirdest, made me nauseous. I was like, dude, I can't hang with you.
I know that sounds like, a weekend at like your, I don't know, grandma's sister's house, the one that smokes cigarettes that you don't know too
All
well, but
the
you, that's like, that's gross. I don't know, to get to give you a hard candy, but you're smelling the yeah, okay. So wait, that's fascinating. Okay, well, I'm hoping I've got the candy vibes. Maybe I eat a lot of candy though. Or I used to, at least.
Citrus.
Citrusy vibes. Yes. Okay. Very cool. So as a synesthesia living person who's got an active third eye, you're tapping in the psychic abilities. I mean, what are some of the weird things you're able to pull out? Are you able to I imagine you're able to say things about people that they go, how the heck did you know that about me? Yeah,
That
tell
is
me.
something I've learned not to do. People don't like that. It's, when you come up to somebody and you're like, look, man, I can tell you a bunch of things, and that will lead to other things, and it will daisy chain into really deep things that you never wanted to talk about. People don't like that. They don't like it when you can see past the surface. So I've learned to hold back. Because it really does not help when you go up to somebody and you bypass the process of getting to know them, tell them all about themselves and go, look, man, we're gonna get along great. Just trust me. It's people don't like that. They like taking the time to get to know each other. They like introducing themselves. So I learned to hold it back. And when I meet people, there is a easiest way to say this, there's this surface energy that people call the aura. That is the information that they're willing to share. So when I read people, I only pick up on this information. Now you can push and go a little further back. And when you get past this frontal lobe, you start to hit a barrier. Yeah, people represent it in different ways. Usually it's kind of a stone wall, but you hit this barrier. As long as you don't cross that barrier, people won't get mad at you. When you pass it, you get into all that private that they don't want to share. So I've learned, hold back, don't push in that deep. You don't need to know everything all at once, which I have, control issues. I want to know everything. So
Yeah.
so I I have also learned that I have this ability to project my emotions, and I also need to learn to hold that back more.
So when you say that, because you said that to me once before, and I thought, oh, I mean, she's just psychologically projecting onto people. But no, you actually mean if you're feeling angry, it's almost like a directed energy weapon of emotion.
People, I think the one I see most commonly is when I get frustrated. They take that as me being aggressive. You know, even if I'm just sitting there, just like trying to get it to go down, you know, just calm down, take a
Does that
minute
mean
and
they become aggressive?
yes, they do. And you trigger that fight or flight response. Usually in this day and age, it's aggressive. And they will start to fight with me. And I'm like, can you just leave me alone for a minute? I need to stop. This is not helping. They feel that same frustration, which can flip into anger and then flip into sadness and flip back into frustration. You know, it's a cycle of emotions. So they feel it and they get aggressive towards me. The manager here actually told me the other day that, because I was very upset, I had gotten some very bad news, had to go up to the office, grab my mail, and the manager picked up on it. And he started fighting with me. And yeah, I don't know this guy from Jack. And he's like, well, you need to fix your attitude. Like, I wasn't even talking to you.
Interesting. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's very different than people reading you being easy to read. That's a much more subtle thing, being able to actually accidentally cause people to have an emotional reaction that is mirroring what's happening inside of you. Whoa, that must be rough.
The past 3 years, I've been in mourning. So I've been trying to stay away from people because, again, projecting that type of grief, it's not good. And that's kind of where I caught on to it the most. Even when I tried to hide the grief, people, they feel it. They know. And they don't like that feeling, so they see me as a negative person. And they don't like that negative thing. You know, they will do that whole well, you just need to raise your vibration. Dude, I'm grieving. You know, and people scatter. Nobody was around for the past 3 years. Friends disappeared. Now, this happens commonly with people who are grieving. People scatter. They feel that emotion. They don't want to be there to help. You know, this long ago, this didn't used to be that way. But I picked up on the projection thing when I was trying to hold it back, when I was trying to just be normal and keep my grief inside. And it never worked. Now, once I started coming out of it, I saw the flip happen. I was so relieved and so happy to not be grieving anymore. I saw people react to that. The more excited I got, the more relieved I got, the happier I got. It was like contagious. I mean, I started going, oh, I could use this. Cheer up a whole room.
Yeah. Well, you know what's so interesting about this? It makes me wonder where, I mean, this makes me ponder a philosophical question, which is, was there emotional intelligence before Christ? And what I mean by that is that, look, psychology is really talking about emotions like this, talking about projecting emotion. I mean, it seems like it's so elementary explaining, but in a way, we take it for granted that we're analyzing emotions, and it's a word we just throw around regularly, but people weren't really doing that. People weren't really speaking about that until the 20th century, at least. And yet, I am so certain throughout all of time, alien being, human being, whatever, I'm almost positive that emotions were a part of things. I
I
know they were. We talk about power. We talk about the tools. We talk about these stories. But, you know, I mean, maybe we don't necessarily get into the inner psychology of Moses as he's standing there and facing I know a little bit about the doubt of the people and the calf and all that stuff. I mean, sure. But the fact is, the human condition involves these emotions. So I wonder, is there anything possible? Do you think is there anything in the text or in the research or whatnot that talks about when Anki was sad that one Thursday? You know, is there anything there? Is there anything that explains why this emotional projection thing is a part of who you are now? If not, that's fine. It's kind of a brain fart I had.
No, I've been actually talking to my daughter about this because I didn't want her to grow up blind to what was happening to her. So in the process of explaining our psychic abilities and how they work and basically how they get stronger, what I explained to her is that your emotions are the trigger. As strange as this may sound, I'm using a fictional show to show her examples of how this applies. And that is a show called Heroes.
Oh, yes.
The emotions trigger the psychic ability to respond because psychic abilities are a self-defense mechanism connected biologically to your pineal gland. So when you hit that terrified level, your abilities pop up. That's why MK Ultra and all of those programs do the trauma trigger. You know, for me, I put in the white room when I was 7, and it terrified me so much that I screamed for help. And that's what triggered it.
This is the white room in Project Stargate in Cambridge.
Actually, this white room was underground in Agartha.
Where is that?
Before I went into Stargate, I had a handler who was a Garthan, and she came by portal. And she opened up the portal and took me down there to go and do the testing in the white room. I actually spoke to Yvonne Smith about this, too, at Contact in the Desert last year.
Hypnotherapist, right? Or she does hypnotic sessions.
She had a workshop for contactees. And I went to that workshop and spoke on the mic about the white room. We went down through portal, and this room was a trip. Everything was paper white. The desk came out of the wall, paper white. It was part of the wall. These were not comfortable chairs, but the chairs were this kind of U-shaped thing. It was a one-piece kind of chair. And they sat as kids. I wasn't the only kid in there. I was put in at one desk. Over there was a reptilian kid. He looked like a 16-year-old, but he was only 8. Next to him was another kid who had this trippy ear thing. I have no idea what he was. He was small, though. So they put us in front of this screen. And the only question I remember being asked is, where's home? And the screen went through star charts. So, yes, they test you. But that white room led to, once I passed that test, they put me into a padded room, basically. That room was also all white. It looked like that standard insane asylum type room. They leave you there until you think you're the only person left alive. I lost track of time. I tried to keep up, but
they don't talk. Do they talk about that in any of the MK Ultra documents at all, or is that just kind of a?
I haven't come across it in any of the documents. I'm not sure they would necessarily document that.
Yeah.
I haven't come across it.
Okay,
but I know. I hit that point to where it was terror. And I was afraid that I was going to die there alone. And I screamed for help. And I was answered. This terror, this desperation, you know, that started the telepathic connection. They talked to me because they were trying to get me to calm down. And I think part of that was also the projection, which I don't think I understood at the time. Putting out that much energy because you desperately need to be rescued from the whole situation, the whole everything. I think that's why they hear people. It's that trauma that teaches us to push out. If you go back through your strongest psychics, you will find many of them hit that point, some major trauma in their childhood. And that trauma pushes out because it's just an instinctual response. With that is emotions. And terror and fear is like a huge beacon. It's not intentional. It's just triggering the psych or the self-defense mechanism. So I'm sure there's got to be other ways to do this. But this is what we know at the moment.
Who are they? Who are they that spoke to you? Is it the Syrians, the Lyrians, the Anunnaki, Anke? Who?
The Anuna are the ones who answered me. They answered me when I was very little.
What does that sound like? Is it a chorus of people? Is it just kind of one ethereal voice? I mean...
Yeah, they speak one at a time. I think if they did a bunch, it would be too overwhelming. But I would be speaking with one person at a time, and they would tell me, like, first man I spoke with, nickname, because I can't pronounce his actual name. His nickname is Bacchus, and he thought that was very fitting as a name. So Bacchus used to come, you know, nickname. He would come and talk to me. He would say he's my uncle and that it's going to be okay and that he's here for me anytime until I calm down. Once I calmed down, he started teaching me about society and history and various things like that. This when you asked earlier, what is the thing I trip off the most on the psychic abilities is when I learn all of this history from aliens, and then I find confirmation for it on Earth. That blows my mind every time. I mean, they taught me all of this history. I didn't know anything about the Anunnaki. They taught me everything. And when I came across the tablets here that everybody else already knew about, I was like, wait, are you serious? Because growing up, very pagan. I was like, I don't know, aliens are out there somewhere, I guess. I mean, like, yeah, we got all the other stuff here. So I was like, I was all into the fae. I was like, elves are awesome. I love my little elven world. And then found out, no, you ain't an elf, you an alien. What? So they taught me all this stuff. And then I found out that it was in cuneiform tablets. And then I found out it was on stels, and there were artifacts supporting all of this history. So what blew me away was I learned this telepathically. They showed me it with the clairvoyance to where they would, the way the Syrians teach, it's a telepathic connection that shows you the experience as though you were literally there.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable finding proof of a history that I was taught telepathically by aliens because my life's normal.
Right. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is wild stuff. It really is.
And this is the type of thing that one of the issues with, because there's other people like me. Yeah, I am not the only one like this. There are other people like me who have the same issue of you can't tell people this stuff. I mean, outside of the fact that it overwhelms people, you have a hard time. I will speak for myself. I have a hard time relating to people as it is because my life has been just crazy. And when I try and pretend that I understand what they're talking about, it doesn't work. If they talk about pop culture, I'm like, okay, who is that? As some famous actor. Okay. Sure.
Right.
Yes, I don't watch TV. I don't play video games. I am still playing catch up on movies. But even then, there's a lot. Yeah, I don't remember the 80s. And most people who have wonderful childhood memories about the 80s, I'm like, okay, I learned about Reagan.
That's yeah, I mean, I am okay, look, so I know you've told me that you think you've got, I mean, you could go on for hours and hours about the stuff you discovered, and we haven't even begun to talk about the artifacts and your
Yes.
research and whatnot. We haven't talked about your time on Mars. We haven't talked about some of the Martian photos. We haven't talked about Reagan. We had, I mean, your nonprofit work. There's so much. So here's what I'm going to say. I think we do need to do a series of interviews, and I think we need to have you on again to really get into what you're uncovering. Because what you're uncovering is, I mean, we had this week, Joe Rogan brings back on Graham Hancock for a debate.
Love.
We know that Eric Von Daniken with all the Chariots of the Gods and Michael Cremo, Forbidden Archaeology. I mean, what you are finding is stuff that I even think goes beyond some of that.
Verifies everything they have written, all of them.
That
And
is, yeah. And what else?
I think what would be a good idea is if we actually showed this evidence. I have told you, I've made fantastical claims, and big claims require big evidence. So I think we should get you the lie detector report. We should get you the Stargate documents. We should get you pieces of the genealogy, whatever you need, artifacts, as far as I can show you these artifacts, where they go in, and show you how the dots connect.
I love it. You've already done a great job already. Kishara Ninki, thank you for making an amazing part one of your appearance on the show and for being an amazing guest. I know we at one point you were like, Greg, I don't know, I don't always do these presentations, I go off topic. I think you are one of the more enjoyable guests I've had on the show, and I'll say it and leave it in the recording. So yeah, I thought you did a great job. This is I very much enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. And I have had a wonderful time. And just know, going forward, I am absolutely an open book. Anything you want to ask, I will answer without hesitation. There will not be, this is going to be full disclosure, full transparency. I'm not going to hold anything back, even if I'm embarrassed about it.
Love it. Kishara Ninki, full disclosure. Part one will continue very soon. Thank you so much for coming on.
Is my honor.
Kishara Ninki, thank you so much for coming on. What an interesting episode. So much interesting stuff. So many pieces of evidence to contemplate. Kishara almost made me forget that Tucker Carlson is now getting into the ET issue. Really? We're gonna have to get Gaia to kick you off their network too? I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. I want to thank you for listening. By the way, if any of y'all are gonna be at HypnoThoughts Live this summer in Las Vegas, I'm gonna be there too. Reach out to me at the Greg Bornstein on Instagram or ratethispodcast.com/openloops.